Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Even for native speakers, English can be a difficult language to learn. English is full of irregular spellings, unpredictable pronunciations, and contradictory vocabulary. There are also many special terms in English that don't exist in other languages, the most recent being eggcorns. This is when someone mishears a word or phrase. And if you haven't heard of an eggcorn, you're not alone. Our friendly guide to the English language is here to instruct us. Making a return to All Sides, we have Mignon Fogarty, author and host of the Grammar Girl podcast. Welcome back to the show, Mignon.
Hi, Amy. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. Before we talk about eggcorns, I wanted to talk about the 2025 words of the year since we have you here, because there are different ones depending on who you ask. Can we start with why dictionary.com picked 6-7 as the word of the year? Why?
Yeah, I know. They came out early with that one in October, and it's a slang term used by kids if you know a parent or are a parent with a child in elementary school or maybe junior high. You heard your fill of 6-7 this winter, this fall. It's a nonsense word. So it comes from a song by Skrilla, a rapper called Doot Doot 6-7. And then it went viral on TikTok. There was a boy named Maverick who shouted it out at a basketball game in a cute, exciting way. And that went viral. And so then kids just picked it up. And the funny thing is it really doesn't mean anything. Some people say it could mean so-so, this or that, but really it's just something they say almost to confound the adults. I've heard from math teachers who say they can't use the word 6 or 7 without, 15 kids in their class shouting out, 6-7. And I think the language thing that's sort of interesting about this is it's not really the first time that something similar to this has happened. Back around the turn of the century, 23 Skidoo was a popular phrase. Mm-hmm. And it also was quite nonsensical. And I found an example where a veteran was, someone said the word 23 and he shouted out Skidoo. Just like the kids.
This I've never heard of. Yeah.
The kids are shouting out 6-7. So mm-hmm. you can't say just the silly kids, because adults love to be silly too.
But having dictionary.com say 6-7 was the word of the year, though, I mean, it's a number, first of all. It's two numbers. It's not not a word. So were they doing it for the headlines?
Certainly they were doing it in part for the headlines. But they also look at data. So, they have this amazing, back end where they can see what people are searching for. And so they could see that people were searching their site for 6-7 because adults just had no idea what it meant. And they were all going to dictionaries to try to figure it out. And, this always comes up when we're talking about words of the year, because sometimes it'll be a phrase. I remember goblin mode from a few years ago. And, lexicographers and linguists, they think of word of the year as what they call more like a lexical unit, which is, something you say that has a meaning, which is funny because 6-7 doesn't really have a meaning, but you could consider it an interjection, I guess, like wow or something like that.
The middle schooler in my life says that 6-7 is officially dead. No one says it anymore. So
that's what I figured. Yeah, it seemed like it was going to be a flash in the pan.
Yeah. So they snuck it in and made it the word of the year just in time for it to die. So
yeah, it was fun when 23 Skidoo came out in the turn of the century around the 1900. You can see in databases that it took a huge spike up and then it crashed back down, just like 6-7 is. But then for some reason, it picked up again in the 40s and caught on more firmly.
And they didn't have TikTok back then to help it go faster. So,
right.
So then Merriam-Webster had a different word of the year, and it's one that was yours as well. So slop is the Merriam-Webster's word of the year, slop, S-L-O-P. Why that word?
Right. Well, it seems like we can't do anything without talking about AI these days. And slop is a term to describe sort of bad AI content, especially the kind you're seeing online, whether it's pictures or, spammy posts or comments on LinkedIn posts. It's all slop. It is modeled after the word spam. It's got that same sort of short sticking power. And yeah, like I thought it was the word of the year. The Economist also chose it as the word of the year. What I love about it is it's so productive. That's what the word linguists use to describe a word that can be used to make a lot of other words. So the gate suffix from Watergate is very productive because we have this gate and that gate. Well, with slop, we have already we've heard slopaganda. So that's, propaganda that's sloppily AI generated. Slopperators are people who publish slop. Slopographers are people who make slop images that look like photographs. Sloppertunists are people who are opportunists around slop. I mean, it just goes on and on. It's even become a verb. You can say people are slopping when they're posting things online like that. So it's just gotten a ton of use as people, become more aware of this low quality AI content.
Yeah, I love the different versions of it. So whenever Merriam-Webster and or you select slop as the word of the year, do you mean all of those different versions that you just listed, because it has can do all those things?
No, I think it's just slop is the word. Like you have to put a word on a pedestal. You have to pick just one, but one thing that makes it particularly appealing is that it's already been expanded in so many ways. You can tell, I think it's a sign that you can tell people find it really interesting and useful. And maybe unlike 6-7, I think this one has sticking power.
And then finally, one last word of the year we'll go over is from Oxford. The Oxford word of the year was rage bait, the internet's most effective hook. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Right. Yeah. Well, rage bait has been around for a long time. It's posting something online that is meant to inflame people. And, people do it because that's what the algorithms like and pe causes people to react. And then when you get a lot of comments, the algorithm loves that and gives it even more attention. And then sometimes people even make money from posts that get a lot of attention and comments. So, rage bait as a thing has been around for, at least 10 or 15 years. But what I love is that now there's a word that enough people recognize that we can name it. And I think maybe if we can name it and talk about it, we can do a better job of resisting it because you shouldn't fall for rage bait. If you see something that makes you furious, you should. I mean, certainly there are things that we should all be furious about, but if someone is intentionally trying to incite you online and make you comment, they might have another agenda. So it's important to be aware of that. And I think having a word like rage bait, can help people be more aware. That's a way that people are trying to manipulate others online.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking with Mignon Fogarty, host of the Grammar Girl podcast, also an author. And now we're going to move back to what I mentioned too in the introduction, which is eggcorns. It's a relatively new term in the lexicon, but I had never heard of it until it was just brought up to me by my producer, Marcus Charleston. Never heard of it. So, Mignon, tell me, what is an eggcorn?
Yeah, I think this word was just coined back in 2003. Eggcorn,
That's a
the
long
story.
time ago. I okay, 2003.
Yeah.
All right.
The story goes that there was a woman who mistook the word acorn, which grows an oak tree, for eggcorn. And it kind of makes sense, right? Because you think like an egg gives rise to a chicken and an acorn gives rise to a tree. Like you can see how someone might be confused about how to spell that word or what it actually is. The meaning is the same. She meant the same thing, but she just sort of got the exact spelling and pronunciation wrong as sort of a homophone. And that's a different, a unique and not unique, but it's a specific kind of mistake that we didn't have a name for before. So, people were discussing this particular mistake on a site called Language Log, and someone said, "Well, why don't we call these why don't we call these eggcorns in the future?" And it really stuck, at least among, people who talk about language.
So, yeah, so you can just, a bunch of people who love language can just name a phenomenon like that.
They can. I know. It's wonderful. Maybe I should aspire to name one someday. Mm-hmm. That would be a great legacy. But other examples. So if you're thinking, mm-hmm. like, well, what are some other ones? So some people mistake Alzheimer's disease and think it's old timer's disease. Mm-hmm. They think migraines are mind grains, like in your mind. Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about expatriates, some people think those are expatriates. And you can see how all those meanings are very similar to the meaning of the real word. And they just sound so similar. You can see I'm having a hard time sort of even, I'm trying to enunciate especially clearly so you can hear the difference because they are so close in pronunciation.
And this came up recently because it happened to CNN. CNN even had a mistake like that. Can you tell me about that one?
Yeah, this was hilarious. And just a couple of days ago, mm-hmm. On Blue Sky, CNN posted about, they were writing about somebody and their sycophants. You know, they were being sycophantic. They had sycophants. But instead, it was spelled sycophants, like demented fans. And, you know, everyone thought it was funny and made fun of them. But, I mean, you can see, it, again, a sicko fan is very similar to a sycophant. And, you know, I even wondered if maybe someone had been using voice-to-text and it misheard, because people are using voice-to-text more these days. And whoever was proofreading didn't catch it. Someone said, I want to know what intern at CNN doesn't know the word sycophants. But, you know, it also could have been a voice-to-text error. But it's a brand new egg corn, which is an awful lot of fun.
Well, in defense to that poor intern, maybe they should have been avoiding that word altogether. I wouldn't say that's an overly common word that people use all the time, a sycophant.
True. Mm. Although going back to AI, there's been a lot of talk about how some of the models are especially sycophantic, and that's causing problems because they, you know, fluff up all the users and agree with them too much. So I've heard that word more this year, but you're right, it's not an especially common word in the general conversation.
But to write out sicko, like sicko-fans, sicko fan, that is pretty sad, because they're like, oh, you think about that for a moment. Is that a word?
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Another one that I have listed here, some people hear post-traumatic stress disorder as post-dramatic stress disorder with a D instead of the T. That seems like a common mistake.
Yeah, definitely a common mistake. Another one is people think old wives' tales are old wise tales, like old smart tales. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, also makes sense because it's like, oh, that's so wise. It makes sense, you know, but it's an old wives' tale.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that one. I definitely used to think it was old wise tales until I became a wife. And I was like, oh, wait, it's old wives' tales. Okay. Yeah.
And here's another one that uses a word that we don't use commonly this way. So one fell swoop. That happened in one fell swoop. We don't really use fell that way much anymore. I think it means the falling of the sword, maybe. And so people will think it's one foul swoop, which, you know, sort of makes more sense. It's like one bad swoop, one foul swoop. But it's actually one fell, like F-E-L-L swoop.
So when does it become an egg corn as opposed to it just being the wrong word?
You know, this is such a great question because people, you know, language changes and sometimes things become acceptable. An example where an egg corn probably has become the standard way of saying it is chomping at the bit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're eager to do something, I think most people now say, oh, he's chomping at the bit. But the original phrase actually was champing at the bit. It was from horse racing. The horse was champing at his bit. And we never use champing anymore. Mm. Who works with horses anymore?
Yeah.
You know, not nearly as many people as when that phrase, you know, originally came into being. And so people don't know champing. They hear the phrase, and so they think maybe they've misheard it, and they think it's chomping. And you know, for a long time, I think maybe even when I started Grammar Girl about 20 years ago, a lot of people would still say that was an error. But you know, I just checked recently, and you know, now it's pretty much the accepted phrase. You know, Garner's Modern English Usage, which is a big usage guide, sort of ranks language change and words that are, you know, in the process of going from one meaning to the other or something like that. And he now puts chomping at the bit as fully accepted, which surprised me a little bit. But, you know,
I mean, that makes sense, though. Yes, I would agree with you. I've never heard of chomping at the bit at all. So,
yeah. So that's one. Acorns, you know, they're one way that language change actually happens.
And is it an acorn if it's a misspelling? Or because I was looking at the praying mantis, and praying with an A versus praying with an E. I feel like maybe they're used interchangeably for the poor mantis.
The poor mantis. Yeah. Again. Yeah. So we aren't, you know, people aren't familiar maybe with that. Is it an insect? I think it is.
Yeah.
A bug. Yeah. I mean, I think spelling error is sort of the part of the key to being an acorn. And it is, because praying with an E and praying with an A, they mean different things. You know, praying with an E is, you know, hunting, and praying with an A is, you know, saying a prayer. Very different things. They sound alike. They're homophones. And it's really only the spelling that's the difference. And that's where people get messed up. And so I think acorns, they stand out much more in writing than they do in speech, because in speech, often you can't even hear the difference.
Yeah. The one that I can't hear the difference, and maybe it's just because I am not pronouncing it correctly, would be carpal tunnel syndrome. Like, of what it's supposed to be versus what, like, I know it's not carpal tunnel syndrome, but I don't know. Saying it quickly, I would feel like either one would pass.
Yeah, yeah. My absolute favorite is prima donna. So apparently, so, you know, that means like a diva, but apparently younger people today will think it's pre-Madonna, like before the age of Madonna the singer. And that just, you know, I would never notice it if they were just speaking, but if I, every time I see that in writing, I just crack up. It strikes me as so funny.
So you're so saying you're such a prima donna, me, and you and I would mean you're trying to be overly fancy, right? But someone who's saying you're a prima donna, that means you're
older.
You're old. You were born before the mid 80s.
Right. Yeah, she's such a prima donna.
Oh, poor Madonna and all the millennials and Gen Xers who love her. Okay. This is all Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about acorns with Mignon Fogarty, host of the Grammar Girl podcast, also an author. And coming up, we're going to talk about some misheard lyrics and mixed up words that trip us up. We'll continue speaking with Grammar Girl in just a moment. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And what you just heard there was a montage of some of the most misheard song lyrics. Among them, we heard, "There's a bad moon on the rise," heard as, "There's a bathroom on the right." Hold Me Close, Tiny Dancer, heard as Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza. Excuse Me While I Kiss the Sky, which is often heard as Excuse Me While I Kiss This Guy. And Sweet Dreams Are Made of These, which is heard as Sweet Dreams Are Made of Cheese. We are talking about misheard words with our friendly guide to the English language, Mignon Fogarty, author and host of the Grammar Girl podcast. Thanks again for being here, Mignon.
You bet. Mondegreens are so much fun.
All right. So you called these a mondegreen. So that's, where does that term come from? What does it mean?
Yeah, this word is a little bit older than acorn. It goes back to the 1950s. And the thing that distinguishes mondegreens from acorns is that the meaning changes. So, you know, Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza is not the same as Tiny Dancer, unlike acorn and acorn. So they're both mishearings, but one changes the meaning. And in the 1950s, a writer named Sylvia Wright misheard a poem, a Scottish poem from the 1700s about a murder of a noble. And it said they laid him on the green, like on the grass. And she, as a child, heard it as "and Lady Mondegreen." So she thought in her, you know, 7-year-old mind that the noble's wife was also killed and laid with him. So, and Lady Mondegreen was also killed instead of "laid him on the green." And so it was the kind of, and so she decided to call this kind of mistake, a mondegreen, after the imagined Lady Mondegreen. And again, for some reason, it just really stuck with language types, and we've used it ever since.
And what's your opinion on whether we should correct people? Because I can understand correcting someone if they mishear a song lyric, you know, like if someone sang "Excuse Me While I Kiss the Sky" for Jimi Hendrix Purple Haze, you were like, no, actually, it's the sky, you know. But whenever it comes to an acorn, which we were talking about earlier, you know, which is a misheard word or a mispronounced word, should you correct people?
Yeah, it's such a great question. I mean, I never correct people unless they've asked me to, or unless I'm in a role where that's my job. So if I'm a teacher, you know, grading essays, I'm obviously going to correct that. And if I'm someone's boss and they put it in a report at work, I'm going to correct it. If I'm a parent, I think I would correct it. But, you know, if I encounter someone, you know, if the teller at the bank uses the wrong word, I am not going to correct that person. I think that would be terribly rude.
Because if you're having a conversation with someone and they say old timers instead of Alzheimer's, that would be a hard thing to correct in the moment, because you might be having a very serious conversation about that disease, right?
Right, right. I know more people feel, there are people who definitely feel more inclined to correct others, but I just don't do it.
Maybe with song lyrics, though, would you let someone really believe it was sweet dreams are made of cheese instead of?
You know, I might, just for the fun of hearing it again someday. But I can imagine, you know, if you're in a bar and, you know, Friday after work and they're belting it out wrong, you might have a good laugh and set them straight. But I don't know. I might be tempted to just let them keep doing it just for the fun of it. Maybe that's a different kind of mean and rude.
Listeners, we'd love for you to join us and share a favorite misheard lyric. I'm sure there are many more than what we had in our little montage at the beginning there, which only included 4. So listeners, I want you to share a misheard lyric. Or earlier in the show, we were talking about acorns. You can tell us about an acorn that comes to mind for you. Give us a call at 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Again, that's 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There's another word that I wanted you to talk about. It differs from acorn and mondegreen. It's called a malaprop?
Yeah, this is another one.
Yeah, what's that?
Comes, from a name. So what makes, so these are called malapropisms, and what makes them different from the others is that it's a speaker's mistake. So it's something like, so it comes from, there was a Richard Sheridan play called The Rivals, and there was a character named Mrs. Malaprop. And for comedic effect, Sheridan had her say the wrong word all the time. So she was trying to say someone was the pinnacle of politeness, and he had her say that he was the pineapple of politeness. She was trying to talk about allegories, and she talked about alligators. And this is something that's used throughout comedy. Laurel from Laurel and Hardy talked about having a nervous shakedown instead of a nervous breakdown, which is a little bit like an acorn, but you're not going to mishear those. It's not a confusion of the sound in the same way. It's a substitution of a similar but different word. So it changes the meaning like a mondegreen, but it's meant to be funny. There was another comedian who talked about, instead of the bride and groom, he talked about the bride and glum, the glum groom. So, and this even goes back to Shakespeare. So Shakespeare, Shakespeare would have been after, I believe, the Richard Sheridan play, if I'm remembering that correctly. But Shakespeare used the effect in Much Ado About Nothing. He said, "Thou wilt be condemned into everlasting redemption instead of everlasting damnation." So he would switch similar sounding words for comedic effect as well.
So a malaprop then is on purpose, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's not always on purpose. So, like, you know, in the play, Mrs. Malaprop, I don't think always knew that she was using the wrong word. She was just confused and, you know, flighty. But, you know, Shakespeare used it on purpose. But so I think maybe the character was meant to be more of a buffoon. So it can be either used intentionally, like bride and glum, you know, on purpose, or to show that a character is sort of confused.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about fun and foibles of the English language with Mignon Fogarty, author and host of the Grammar Girl podcast. Listeners, do you have a favorite misheard lyric that you would like to share? And earlier in the show, we were talking about acorns. You can tell us if one of those comes to mind for you. Give us a call at 614-292-8 513. That's 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Our last instance where we get terms wrong is called a spoonerism. This is another, all of these words have been new to me. So, all right, what's a spoonerism?
Yeah, so this is another one after a person. So this is named after Reverend William Archibald Spooner, who was taught at Oxford in the early 1800s to the early 1900s. And he was always misspeaking. So he would say things like little fit bunny instead of little bit funny. For example, you know, I think we hear it now a lot, like flutterby instead of butterfly, ossifer instead of officer. You know, it's the mixing up of sounds in ways that often still have meaning, but don't always. People might say goys and burls instead of boys and girls. I've heard keys and parrots instead of peas and carrots. That one reminds me a little bit of Cockney rhyming slang too, you know, that plays with words and their sounds and has the same word, but you know, word with meaning, but for something different. Another, better late than never, can be better nate than lever. You know, they're just silly. And sadly, apparently, Reverend Spooner was not at all happy that this misspeaking took on his name. So he did not want to be remembered this way. So, you know, we apologize to him. Hopefully he's not growling in his rave.
Oh, I see what you did there. I was going to say, is he haunting us? But you just spoonerized him himself. Yes. Yeah. The example that I have in here is you may have hissed the mystery lecture instead of saying you may have missed the history lecture. Like, but it's sometimes they can be, they're accidentally spoken where you're just talking too quickly and you mix up the letters, right?
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, people have written books. There was a there's a famous it's a Rindersella play on Cinderella. Hee Haw way back in the day did a skit called Rindersella. And it went, the storle of this Maury is this. If you ever go to a Bansy Fall and you want to prance some hints to loll in fuv with you, don't forget to slop your dipper.
All right, that's too many. I can't even follow that one.
I know. Yeah. Instead of drop your slipper. So, yeah, people have been playing on these words for a long time, and it's a lot of fun. It is hard to discern the meaning sometimes when there's too many of them.
Listeners, do you have a favorite misheard lyric, a spoonerism, or an eggcorn to share? Please join us, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we have Rob with us from Columbus. Rob, what did you want to tell us about?
Hi there. I was just going to bring up the song Blank Space by Taylor Swift. When it first came out, so the lyric has actually got a long list of ex-lovers. They'll tell you I'm insane. A lot of people, myself included back then, misheard it for gotta love the Starbucks lovers. They'll tell you I'm insane.
I remember that. Yeah. I'm with you, Rob. I thought she was saying Starbucks too.
Product placement.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much for that. So so there's misheard lyrics all the time, and I feel like some of them catch on, like people figure it out, but then others maybe stick around forever where everyone always thought it was the other way.
Yeah, I know in Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire, a lot of people think Trouble in the Suez Canal, is actually Trouble in the Sewers.
Mm.
They don't remember about the Suez Canal.
Well, yeah, there's a lot in the Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire that could be misheard. It's lots of words in that song.
Fast.
Yeah, we have Liz called in but didn't want to be on air. And Liz's example of a lyric example is, a fine time to leave me Lucille. This is from Kenny Rogers. So a fine time is she heard 500 children in a field where the lyric is five. I'm not familiar with that song. She didn't want to be on the air to explain it more. Do you know that one?
I know the song. So instead of a fine time to leave me Lucille, she heard of
five children.
Oh, five children in the field.
Yeah.
It's similar cadence, similar number of syllables, it sounds like.
Listeners, do you have a favorite misheard lyric or a spoonerism or an eggcorn you would like to share? Give us a call. We have Mignon Fogarty with us, host of the Grammar Girl podcast and author. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, more about humorous words, phrases, and inside jokes within families and close-knit groups. That's when All Sides continues in just a moment on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. We're indulging in some wordplay this hour with our friendly guide to the English language, Mignon Fogarty, author and host of the Grammar Girl podcast. Thanks again for being with us, Mignon.
You bet. This has been a fun hour.
So now we are going to move on. And listeners, you can still call in with your misheard lyrics or your eggcorns. But while we get the phone lines organized for a minute, Mignon and I are going to talk about Familex. Those are the special words or phrases shared by families or close-knit groups. So this word must come from the word dialect, right? Familect?
Right. It's your family dialect. And we've really saved the best for last. These are my favorites. And I hope people will call in with their stories because every family has a story like this. And I play them at the end of every podcast that I put out, every episode I put out every week. I share someone's story because they're always fabulous. If you're trying to figure out what I mean, here's an example. So, when you spend a lot of time with people like your family, you tend to develop this private language and you have all these inside jokes. So years ago, I was trying to write a novel. And in my writing group, someone was reading my manuscript and they said, a chapter four, I just felt like your character was going to get your main character. She was going to give up. Like in chapter four, it all just all fell apart. And, you know, I was kind of crushed because that's not a good thing to hear about your novel. And so I told my husband. And so now whenever I have a project that isn't going well, or especially when I feel like giving up, like if I'm halfway through weeding the yard and then I'm like, oh, I just can't go on. He's like, is it chapter four? Is it time for chapter four? So that's chapter four has become our private language, our familect, to mean giving up.
I can give an example of one of my familects. So we live in a city and we have to wait for the walk sign to be able to cross the road. And my kids were really confused waiting for the walk sign. And so my husband just decided to name the little guy. Right. He was like, look for Ned. That's Ned. He named him Ned. I don't know why. So we spent years just being like, is Ned there? All right. Now you can cross once you see Ned. And so we have talked about calling him Ned. And then when my kids went to school, we had to explain to them, we're like, no one else calls him Ned. That's not actually his name.
Yes, that is such a common story, too. That kids, it won't be until they go to school. Sometimes even when they go to college and have a roommate, that they won't realize that nobody uses the same word they do for something. One woman called in and she said she always thought a hutch was, you know, the piece of furniture was called a folly. They called it a folly in her family and she never knew why. And it turned out when her parents were first married, I think when they were on their honeymoon, the wife, the mom, she bought a really fabulous hutch, and then it cost more to ship it home than she had paid for it. And so the husband called it her folly. It was the first folly of their marriage, and then they always referred to the hutch as the folly, and their kids just thought that was the name for that piece of furniture.
That's really funny. Yeah. Another one in our family is that my son thought that lightning bugs were called beaming bugs. Like he really thought, because they beam light, he thought that that was the name. He couldn't come up with the word lightning bug when he was trying to, so he called it a beaming bug. He was like, I want to go out and catch beaming bugs. And it's just so adorable that they will always be beaming bugs forever and ever.
Yeah, is another very common way. So many people call in with familects that come from children either misunderstanding or mispronouncing words. And then the family just uses it forever because it was so darn cute.
So listeners, if you want to call in with a familect, a humorous word or phrase or an inside joke that your family has and you want to explain it, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email your familect to allsides@wosu.org. But also we'll still take those misheard lyrics as well. Charlie in Clark County, what did you want to tell us about Charlie?
Hey, hi. What a fun show. Really? Well, two things. Number one, the Van Halen song Panama, I never knew that was Panama. I always thought it was Had Enough or who. I don't even know what they were saying. I know that one comes up sometimes on misheard lyrics of the Van Halen song Panama. But as far as our family goes, wife and I and some of the kids, whenever it's very, very hot outside, people start complaining and we end up flashing back to the classic Mel Brooks film Blazing Saddles, where there's a scene, they're working on the railroad, it's extremely hot, people are passing out, you may know that scene, and they go, well, it can't be more than 114, and we'll just throw that out in the middle randomly when it's, you know.
It can't be more. Yes, that's
114. That's great. A lot of them also come from pop culture. A listener once called and said that in their family, if a lid is too tight, they'll say, "Who hulked this closed?" the Hulk. Another favorite one I have from a listener that we use now in our family because I loved it so much. It's like, are you mad or are you ghost town mad? Because they were on vacation at an amusement park called Ghost Town, and such a big fight in the family broke out in the parking lot over what they were going to do next that it became the epitome of how mad you could possibly be. So they'll say, are you mad or are you ghost town mad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And another one for us is In my husband's family, they started calling TV shows by the like secondary character's name, right? And it was just something that they always did, and they still do. So if they were going to sit down as a family to watch Walker, Texas Ranger, they called it watching Trivette, like his, the other guy. Yeah.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. So they are like, oh, you want to watch Trivette? And so my, you know, we do the same thing. We call some shows by their secondary character's name. There was an old TV show named Early Edition, and there was a secondary character on it named Fishman. And so we would be like, do you want to sit down and watch Fishman?
Oh, that feels very insidery.
Isn't it? Yeah.
That's fun.
Listeners, if you have a Familect or an Eggcorn or a misheard lyric you would like to share, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mignon, we have a bunch of phone lines, and they all started ringing at once, and so I think that we started to lose some people just because there were so many people calling at once. So we're going to like give my poor student producer and my producer a beat to try to sort a few people out. Do you have another
Familect
you want to tell me?
Yeah. I have so many. I just love these. You know, the Spoonerisms and the Mondegreens, they come from names, and a lot of Familects also come from someone the family knows that does an odd or unusual thing, and then it becomes named after that person. So someone called in and they had, I think it was an exchange student once named Nigel. And Nigel would never take the last cookie or the last donut piece of cake. He would always break it in half and leave half for someone else. And they said they'd tell him, nobody wants the rest, you can have it. And he would refuse to take the last. He would take, if it had been broken in half, he would take a quarter. He would break it in half again. And they said it would get to the point of ridiculous where they were dealing with like crumbs. And so whenever someone breaks something in half or doesn't take all of the last piece of pie or something, they say, oh, you're Nigeling that cookie, aren't you? So names like that, very common. Another super funny one, a couple was at the dog park, and there was a woman who had a dachshund named Stanley, and they said they couldn't even describe how much the woman looked like her dog. And so now whenever they encounter someone who looks a little bit like their dog, they'll say, oh, looks like we have a Stanley situation going on here.
Oh, okay. We have Mary in Columbus. Mary, did you want to share some song lyrics with us?
Yes. Hi. I have a blast from the past in the 70s. The Barry Manilow song, Looks Like We Made It. My friend's brother thought it was Looks Like Tomatoes. Looks Like Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is, I don't remember the artist, but it was I Want to Hold You Till I Die. Till we both break down and cry. Mm. I want to hold you till the fear in me subsides. He, same kid, thought it was, I want to hold you till I die, till we both break out in hives.
What a way to go.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Mary. Thank you for telling us about those. I appreciate it. And listeners, there's still time for you. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I saw an article from a few years ago in The Atlantic, but it was the title of the article is Why Do We Speak More Weirdly at Home? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I read that it's but also that same article said that it's good for your kids to have a secret language at home. So can you talk about that for a minute?
It is. It really develops a sense of closeness. In a lot of ways, we could go back to the beginning, like with 6-7. You know, that's a thing that friends say together, and it makes them feel like they're part of the same community, part of the mm-hmm. same group. And so having a secret language or private language like that with your family creates that same sense of closeness. We're in this together. This is ours. Interestingly, a lot of people felt like Familects sort of increased during the beginning of the pandemic when everyone was at home together, spending maybe more time than they normally would together, and gave people more of an opportunity to develop that private language. One that someone called in with me was they had talked about having maskinesia. So they would be talking to someone and then they couldn't remember if they had been wearing a mask or not, and they would panic. So there were a lot of COVID-related Familects that came out. Another common source of Familects is multi-generational families from immigrants. So if the grandparents speak a different language, there can be words from that generation that get passed down, and often like you know, mixed up a little bit that will mean things. One person, her grandfather or father spoke Yiddish, and they would say, and the Yiddish word for face is something like punam. Mm. And so, but the girl, she would make a grumpy face, and they would say, oh, there's the punam, and like, there's the face. Yeah. But punam came to mean, to her, punam came to mean grumpy, because it was only when she had a grumpy face. So there's a lot of examples, too, where a foreign word from an older generation will get passed down. And often, maybe like one of the mishearings we talked about earlier, might get twisted a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it might not even eventually be recognizable as the foreign word. But it makes its way into the family's language.
Yeah, a mishearing in my family is one of my kids, whenever we were saying like hallelujah, right, thought we mm-hmm. were saying hallabaloo-yah, right? And so now anytime it's hallelujah, we say hallabaloo-yah, hallabaloo-yah, because it's cute and it's funny and I like it better that way. Hallabaloo-yah.
Oh, that reminds me of when another caller had. They were from Utah, and they were driving by a school, and it had on the billboard, it said Hoopsatorum, and they didn't know what it meant, but they thought it was such a fun word. So now they use it as a celebratory phrase, like if someone has a baby, they'll text Hoopsatorum, you know, like congratulations. And they only realized later it meant Hoops at Orem. It
was like Orem's the name of a city.
Orem, Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was advertising a basketball game, a high school basketball game. Hoops at Orem.
I like Hoops at Orem.
Yeah, we say Hoops at Orem in my family now, too.
We have Chris from Columbus. Chris wants we had this misheard lyric in our intro, but Chris, you can bring it back up. Go for it.
Yeah, the Bad Moon Rising, John Fogerty, Clarence Clearwater Revival was the band. Mm-hmm. And people start asking him, why are you singing Bathroom on the Right? And so later on, he did a live version, and he sang Bathroom on the Right on purpose.
Did he really? Oh, so he can get in on the joke, right? Where he didn't enunciate Bad Moon Rising quite well enough, and so he just embraced it and sang Bathroom on the Right.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Thank you for that.
What a good sport.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be in your family either. People have, they call friend elects, you know, mm-hmm. language you say with your friends. Mm-hmm. They're also ludolects. That's among gamers. It's from, I think it's the Latin word for game. Mm-hmm. I'm Latin or Greek. And fan elects, F-A-N, fan elects. So fans will have in language. Taylor Swift fans have a lot of inside language, or they'll just use Taylor Swift lyrics to show that they're part of the same in group, the same fan culture. And sometimes it can you can't enter the culture inauthentically. So a while ago, when the Senate had a hearing about Ticketmaster messing up the ticket sales to a Taylor Swift concert, all the senators kept trying to use Taylor Swift lyrics in their statements, and it was very cringy, and they all got mocked.
Stay in your lane, senators. Stay in your lane. Angie in Columbus. Angie, what did you want to tell us about?
Oh, I wanted to tell a story about our adult daughter who was living with us while she was finishing school. And she came into the house after a rather difficult day at school and stomps in and stomps to her room and said, I just need 5 minutes to decompose.
so obviously she needed to decompress, but I bet she felt but I bet she needed to decompose as well. I've had those days. Thank you so much, Angie.
It's like the recombobulation zone at the airport.
Yes. That's exactly what it is, the recombobulation zone. Bob in Columbus. Bob, what familect did you want to tell us about?
Well, when my kids, I have three kids, my daughter was in, I think, around junior high age, and she was telling her brothers about this band that she liked or had heard. Metallica, and her brothers thought that was hilarious because she was really talking about Metallica.
Oh, so. Poor thing. Oh, Metallica. I like that, though.
That's great.
Go ahead, Bob. Were you going to say something else? Sorry.
That's all I had to say about that one. I have a couple others. I don't know if you're...
Go ahead. Real quick.
Okay. this, I don't know if this fits any of your categories, but I still have to laugh at myself. I never understood the Bible story about the prodigal son. Now, you heard that many times in church, and I just didn't get it. I didn't understand the point of it, because I thought prodigal was the adjectival form of prodigy. So I thought this Bible story was talking about a child prodigy, and in the context of that story, it made absolutely no sense to me.
All right. Yeah, Bob. So that's a mishearing of a word. Would that be an acorn? Or I'm not sure, Mignon.
I'm not sure that fits any of the categories, because it's, it's a little different. Maybe I can make up a name for it. Maybe we can call it a prodigal.
Yeah, there. A prodigal when you think it's a prodigy. So he basically thought prodigal meant prodigy.
It was a whole different, I guess that would be like an acorn. It's like a whole different word, but it's a word that I don't think exists.
Marissa, real fast, you have 30 seconds. Tell me your misheard lyric.
Hi, yeah. Mine was a Paula Abdul song, if you guys remember, Vibology, where she's like, Vibology. And the whole time I thought she was saying $5 jeans. And I swear this is a perfect Old Navy commercial. Just call me Old Navy, do $5 jeans. I got you.
All right. Yeah, Marissa, I could use some $5 jeans and Paula Abdul could sing it. That would be perfect.
Well, be worth singing about.
Yes. Mignon Fogarty, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today to talk about spoonerisms and eggcorns and Familex and all of the things. And we had many more calls that we couldn't get to, but I really appreciate your time. We've been talking with Mignon Fogarty, author and host of the Grammar Girl podcast. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And you're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen back at our website, wosu.org/allsides. Subscribe to our podcast. Every episode is for free in our mobile app. And be sure to like All Sides on Facebook and follow our show on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is at allsideswosu. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Amy Jurevich. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.